Blog Talk Radio.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger, and I'm your host, Kel Fritzy. It's with a heavy heart that I do this show today. We have had quite a tragedy. We have had quite a few tragedies at the hands of Islam. What happened in Kenya over the weekend, what happened in Pakistan as well with the Christians. It's been a very hard week for the old Red Fox here, going through all this news and trying to convey to you how I'm going to get through reporting something like this, because it's not easy. What happened in Kenya? What happened on that Saturday just passed? People visiting the Westgate Shopping Center in Nairobi, and all of a sudden, hell visited them. Who is responsible for this? Who's taking responsibility? Wow. At this point, so far, it would appear that Al-Shabaab is. I'm going to give you a little bit of history about Al-Shabaab in a few moments, but I just want to concentrate on the victims of what happened in Kenya. And I want to convey to you that we are all Kenyans today. We are all the men and the women and the children who were taken out by Islamists, by terrorists. We are all Pakistanis today. Where over 70 Christians were slaughtered as well. Pardon me. What lies in the heart of a man who can open fire and murder in cold blood? But even more disturbing, it's a protracted measure in which they went about doing it. They entered this Westgate shopping center around noon. And they were taking people. They were pulling people to the left and to the right. And they were saying, if you're a Muslim, you can go. We don't want you. We want the Christians and we want the Americans. And if these people could recite a passage from the Quran or tell these terrorists the name of Muhammad's mother, they were free to go. Women and children and innocent men slaughtered for no other reason for them being Christians. Yet they really wanted to hurt Kenya. They've been pretty angry with Kenya, messing around in Somali affairs, which I'll get to in a minute. Al-Shabaab, another Islamic terrorist group, banned terrorist group, I will remind you. But I ask you, what's the point in having a banned terrorist group? Why have a recognized label when it does no good? We can ban them all we want. Ban, 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 you're banned, you're banned. Okay, I'm banned. Okay, I'm banned. I can't do anything now. That's not how it works. They still get out there, and they still kill, and they murder in the name of Allah. Do you know how many people were murdered, slaughtered? I'm telling you. You know, I have a question for you, and I put it right in my show notes. I want to ask you something right now. How much more of Islam are you willing to tolerate? How much more? We find out that there are Western connections behind this hideous act as well. There are unconfirmed reports that this so-called white widow, a widow of one of the 7-7 bombers in England, was involved in this, and she was actually barking orders. We find out that a Muslim from Toronto, Canada, was also involved. Where are these people coming from? How did they get here? And that's something else I want you to realize. These aren't far away Islamists carrying out these atrocities. Oh, no, 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 that's not the case at all. These are converts, like this so-called white widow. These are converts that come out of Canada, and they head on over there, and they engage in their jihad, and they murder us. What makes this attack particularly nauseous is how methodical it was. They went in there and they knew their targets. But they wanted to make sure they got the targets right. You to the left of me, you to the right of me, what's your name? What's your religion? Are you a Muslim? Fine, get the hell out of here. We don't want you. Go away, get lost. Are you a Christian? 5 seconds later. And it didn't matter if they were kids. Oh, gosh, no. No, didn't matter. Little girls, little boys, shot in the head. There is one witness account. This woman, when she was finally able to escape the nightmare, she came out with her little boy. And she said that it's by the grace of God that me and my son escaped. A bullet just grazed his head, but it bounced off the wall and it hit another little boy beside him and killed him. These are your Quranimals. We have losses all over the country in Kenya. We have losses all over the planet. At last count, 62 dead, 175 injured from 14 nations. We have a radio and TV personality named Rahula Aditi Asood, who was killed in Kenya. He was from Kenya. We have Kofi Anwar, a Ghanaian poet from Ghana, who was killed. From Canada, we have two Canadians, one named Anna Marie Delajose, 29 years old. She was a Canadian diplomat. We have two Indians. We have an 8-year-old from India and a 40-year-old from India murdered. There are 4 from Britain, from the United Kingdom, who were slaughtered. One of their names was Ross Langdon. In France, 2 women were killed. A person from South Africa was killed. A 33-year-old Dutch woman from the Netherlands was killed. A woman named Miss Zhu from China was killed. Dr. Jean-Jesus Ortiz Uri from Peru was killed. We have wounded from the United States, from Canada, New Zealand, Switzerland. Why did this occur? because Al-Shabaab was upset with Kenya interfering with Somali affairs. But you see, Kenya had never really involved itself in Somali affairs until the Al-Shabaab started coming over and started bombing their disco sites and their restaurants. And Kenya had enough. So they said, look, knock it off. Well, Al-Shabaab didn't take kindly to that, didn't they? No, we saw what happened on the weekend, didn't we? Like, who is the Al-Shabaab anyway? What is this organization? There's a few conflicting points about when the Al-Shabaab was actually formed. Some say it was 2003, 2006. Some say somewhere in between, but for the sake of edification, I'm going to give you a timeline about what Al-Shabaab is, and I'm going to start with 2003. Al-Shabaab, in 2003, they emerged as a militant youth wing, and Shabaab means youth in Arabic. They were the militant youth wing of Al-Ittihad al-Islami. That's one of the many Somali extremist groups that formed in the 1980s and 1990s. In 2003, Al-Shabaab, they remained relatively inactive, and they don't control any territory in Somalia, not until 2008. In 2006, Ethiopia invades Somalia, removing an Islamic group known as the Islamic Courts Union from Mogadishu, and that is the Somali capital. It had established a modicum of central authority in June of that year, of 2006. Al-Shabaab, which has served as a military wing of the Courts Union, begins to rise in prominence as a member of the resistance to Ethiopian invasion. In 2007, Al-Shabaab's influence grows, and that's thanks in part to material assistance from the government of Eritrea, which uses the group as a proxy against its longtime enemy, Ethiopia. The group retreats to the swampy south of Somalia, conducting a largely conventional guerrilla campaign that bogs down the advance of Ethiopian forces. In 2008, driven in part by an increasing association with Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab signals a new approach to fighting with a coordinated series of suicide attacks hitting government offices, UN agencies, and the Ethiopian consulate. The U.S. State Department identifies Al-Shabaab as a foreign terrorist organization in February of 2008. In 2009, Ethiopia pulls back from the Somali capital. Its forces are replaced by an influx of Ugandan and Burundian soldiers serving as part of the African Union peacekeeping mission, which is largely confined to Mogadishu. In 2010, multiple suicide bombers attack at a rugby club, an Ethiopian restaurant in Kampala, Uganda. That death toll, ladies and gentlemen, was 76 people, and Al-Shabaab takes responsibility. That attack was Al-Shabaab's first transnational attack, and that suggested that this group could add to regional destabilization. In 2011, Kenya commences military operations in southern Somalia, accusing al-Shabaab of a series of attacks in southern Kenya. And the Kenyan forces easily push back al-Shabaab fighters. In 2012, Kenyan forces dislodge al-Shabaab forces from the strategically important port city of Kismayo, and that is one of the group's few remaining strongholds and a key source of revenue. Now, in claiming responsibility for Saturday's horrific attacks at Westgate, al-Shabaab called it retaliation for Kenya's 2011 incursion into Somalia. So that is why innocent men, women, and children had to perish. How much more of Islam are you willing to tolerate? Islam is the fifth column. You see, people, you have to understand something. Muslims, their Islamic identity, it supersedes any national identity. Islam does not recognize borders. Islam does not recognize man-made government. Islam recognizes caliphate. So Kenya stepped in because Kenya was being attacked by the al-Shabaab and Kenya decided to do something about it. So the cowards that they are, they decide to retaliate, not through governance, not through speech, not through negotiation. No, they retaliate the only way these Quranimals understand, and that is through violence and death. They're retrogrades. They're Islamofascists and they're retrogrades. And where are the Muslims right now? Do you see any Muslims in your town square? Do you hear them on the radio? Are you reading their comments in the dailies? I am. And I'm getting very angry about it. I'm very loud. And I know how to type. I've been listening to the radio programs all morning, call-in shows, and you're getting the, you know, the whole gamut. Ban Islam, stop importing them, stop the immigration. Well, yeah, natural reaction, of course. And as far as I'm concerned, a logical reaction. Colin, Lucha, Paul, Poppy, hello guys. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome, guests. But then you get the Muslim apologists calling in. And you notice they always start off with, well, we've been under persecution, too. We're victims, too. I want to ask these Muslims, when's the last time some sort of guerrilla group, a Christian guerrilla group, just moved in, went to your village, and shot up your kids? When's the last time that happened, Muslims? So you're the victim, too. One came as close as ever is actually saying pretty much what I've been telling you and what you all know. If we say anything, we're persecuted. Yeah, they're afraid of the blowback. How is it that 1.5 billion people cannot stand up to the 1%, the so-called 1%? How is that? And why is it that they are so afraid living in Canada, the United States, Britain, Australia? One percent of 1.5 Muslims. That's it. I can flick that off my fingernail. But no, they're too afraid. They'll get backlash. Yeah. No, it's because they're complicit. I really struggle every single day to give Muslims some sort of pass, just one tiny little opportunity to show me that you're going to stand up to this. Do they do it? No, they do not. This is the latest example. No, they call into the radio shows and say, no, well, we're victims too. That's what they do. And they pollute the comment sections in the national dailies, telling us we do not understand. You do not understand the geopolitical situation over there. So you should just shut the hell up, right? What is there to understand? You targeted Kenya because what were they doing? They were defending their borders. They were defending their people from being attacked by the likes of Al-Shabaab. And like I say, apparently one of the masterminds behind this was the so-called White Widow. What's her name? I don't know. Some sort of freak show that converted, married one of the crazies that attacked England July 7th there. What was her name? Oh, Samantha Luthwaite. Yeah. Apparently she was running around barking orders. I don't know. Like I say, at the time I went to the air, not too sure. So far she's a link, but I glossed a lot of material from a website to do this show, and that's Defender of the Faith, and that's Paul's site. You see Paul in our chat rooms. So I want to thank Paul for that, and I put the link to Defender of the Faith, Guardian of Truth, right there in my show highlights. You might have to refresh your page to see it because I actually added it while the show was going to tape. Because for some reason I was trying to get it in there earlier, and it wouldn't. It finally got in there for me, but already the show had gone to tape. So my archive listeners, you'll certainly see it. So I really do want to thank Paul for that. That would be Paul Alexander. Yeah. All these connections. All these Western connections to the Al-Shabaab. What compels these people to do this? Why would they want to go in there and murder like this? What truly is in it for them? There is another account. And I truly do not know what to make of this. There is a woman, she was another one who got out of the carnage. and she was being interviewed. And a couple of the terrorists came right up to her. And they said to her, "We're not animals. Please forgive us. Do you forgive us?" I don't know whether or not they're clinically insane or what it is. I don't know, or if they are indeed just good Muslims. But this is how they handle their beats, isn't it? Yeah. They go in there, and they like to slaughter. They rule. They love to rule in fear. This can happen anywhere. This could happen, Harrods of London, the Eaton Center in Toronto, Macy's in New York City. This sort of thing can happen anywhere. And it happened in Kenya. And there are Western attachments, like I say. Unconfirmed, the White Widow, the convert, who married a 7-7 bomber. And we have one unconfirmed report, like I say. One came from Toronto. Leads me into another interesting point. How on earth do they get here in the first place? How do they pass the sniff test of immigration? And once they're here, they're our problem. And what do we know what they're up to? What goes on in that mosque down the street from you exactly? I'd like to know. I would really like to know what exactly goes on in those mosques. But we're not allowed to know because, you know, CARE, the Council of Islamic, and I'm sorry, I still hate saying American, but CARE is the Council of American Spit, Islamic Spit Relations. Spit. We got that. CARE won't let us. So if we are sending homegrown terrorists over there to create these atrocities like the one we saw in Kenya, what are we to do here? How much more of Islam are you willing to tolerate? I was telling you, I was listening to the radio shows all morning, reading the dailies. Going to the comment section, seeing what the pulse of the regular people, what they were thinking was. Mm-hmm. There was one troll on the National Post. That's Canada's national newspaper. I post there quite frequently. I'm quite the regular over there. As a matter of fact, I'm such a regular that when I don't show up and when I finally do, I have fellow posters say, "Hey, where you been? Haven't seen you." Those little fingers of mine always typing away. Well, so anyway, there was this one individual on there. I don't know where he or she is from. That's the thing about the internet. You don't know if they're in Canada or the United States or if they're texting from who knows where. But there was one fella on there. And he was telling us the whiteys to suck it up and get used to it. Yeah. Telling the whitey, calling us infidels, calling us names. And people were typing back and forth and telling him to essentially take a hike, get the hell out, get lost. Here's money. I'll pay for your plane fare. That you know the nonsense that goes on in the chat rooms, the chat forums. You know that sort of nonsense. So, yeah, all that was going on, and I was putting my 2 cents worth in. But I was posting rather responsibly. I was posting truths, and I was offering places where you could go to back up my statements. And over the weekend, I mean, this was going on over the weekend. And so, of course, supper calls and radio shows call and life calls, and you walk away from the computer, and you're doing your thing, like I was doing, and I got back to the computer and decided to go in to the National Post to see how my comments were doing, what receivership I was getting, that sort of stuff, and, well, all my comments had been removed. So I scrolled to the top, and there's my little box, you know, Ruffian C, leave your comment here. So I typed in, where's my comments? Hit enter. Get a big red flag saying you are not allowed to comment here. What is this? So I thought, well, I'll just go to another story. Maybe they, I don't know what's going on. So I went to a story about, oh, I don't know, cats and dogs. Okay. The cats and dogs are fighting again, and oh boy, I have to say something here. Kitty cat, get back in your corner. Doggy, leave the kitty alone. Type in a comment. Big red flag. You are not allowed to comment here. So I left an email for the National Post. I said, what gives? No response. So I phoned the head office in Toronto this morning. I want to know what's going on. What is the protocol in posting, and what are the breaches? Hang on, ma'am. I'll redirect you. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. You have to phone this number. Oh, who are they? Oh, that's the editor. I said, okay, fine. Thanks. So I phoned the editor, and that said, Jonathan Kay. He's apparently the national editor right now. Get his voicemail. Leave me a message at such and such an email. So I copy and paste the email, and I send him an email, and I ask him what's going on. And don't tell me it's my Discus, because I'm allowed to comment on Discus on other sites. What's the deal with National Post? Why am I banned? So far, no response. See, this is the dimitude. This is the ignorance. When you talk truth, when you hit them with Islamic realities, they shut you down. They shut me down. They shut me out of the Canadian National Post. I was not rude. I never am. I cannot afford to be rude. I'm too easy to find, for one. With my blog and this radio show, I'm way too easy to find. So I'm very, very, very circumspect when I approach the comment boards. However, they still felt compelled to shut me out and remove all my comments. However, little Abdul, he's still happily posting away, telling us whiteys to get a grip and get used to it. We're coming, ha ha. Yeah. He's all right, though, because he's a Muslim. You know, he's one of the protected species. And they're giving us all sorts of excuses. And you guys are hearing them again as well. This isn't Islam. This isn't a religion of peace. I'm sorry, but I can't remember who coined that term. I know he died in the 1950s. He was some sort of caliph. I think it was in the 1950s or whatever he coined the term. Religion of peace. And they always say that. I talked to you guys a little while back about that term, religion of peace, and I told you how disappointed I was when George W. Bush used it after the 9/11 attacks. George W. Bush did not understand the context of that. A lot of people don't. What this particular caliph was citing, the entirety is always left out. Yes, he did say Islam, is a religion of peace. But what he meant is that it will not be a religion of peace until the caliphate is complete, until we all submit. Islam in Arabic is submit, submission. And this is what Islam is, and this is what Islam does. They submit to the will of Allah. There are so many passages in the Quran that tell you what they're all about. And I've told you more than once on this radio program, and I told you at the beginning, Islamic identity supersedes any national identity. If they feel slighted, they are obligated as Muslims to rectify it in their twisted logic. And that includes going into shopping malls and shooting down children. You know, you don't have to listen to me, but I do appreciate it that you do. And I know when I'm speaking with you, I'm preaching to the choir, because my listeners are very, very smart, and they know what's going on. So more or less, I'm doing a reaffirmation of what you already know. But one thing I just want to offer you is my opinion on how I feel about this, and I think it's absolute garbage. Kenya could have been prevented. We had an opportunity years and years and years ago, a huge opportunity to stop Islam, this encroachment in its tracks. Right off the bat, boom, it could have been done, like, very easily, virtually overnight. And that was in 1928. When we cottoned on to the explanatory memorandum of the Muslim Brotherhood and what they had in store for us. We didn't take it, though. Maybe we didn't know back then. The explanatory memorandum, in fact, actually was not disclosed until, I believe it was around 2002, 2003, somewhere around there in the United States. I think another copy was found in the Netherlands. All right, okay. Okay. So let's say we didn't know anything about the explanatory memorandum until 2003. Okay, that's 10 years ago. Okay, 10 years. We've had 10 years to deal with this. You know what? Let's go back a little further. Let's go back 12 years. Let's go back to 2001. We had something to do. We could have done something then, too. What about 7/7? What about in Spain? Now we have Kenya. Over 70 souls lost at the hands of jihadists because they didn't like Kenya interfering with their politics. Well, if you didn't go over into Kenya and start shooting up their citizens, maybe they would have left you alone. I'm taking a break. I'm losing my mind. But I'm going to come back, and I'm going to switch gears a little bit, because I have another lovely story from the Religion of Peace. Oh, but before I do, I have one thing I want to share with you, and this made me angry before I take the break. You know, I was telling you, been listening to all the radio programs. I was listening to one in particular. You know what? I'm going to take a break. I'm going to bring this up. is I want you to hear this for yourself, what this radio host had to say. I have it here on file. I'm taking a break. I will see you back here in a few minutes. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Carol Fritzy. And I think I've calmed down a little bit, but maybe not. Before I went to the break, I was telling you I was listening to a radio program, one of many. I was going back and forth, and I was listening to this one in particular. I listen to them every day because they do have very good reports out of Ontario. I like to keep up on the local politics and everything else, so I listen to this particular program. But when I heard this, I just about flipped.
Watching all of these unbelievable stories happening, to complain about minutiae like that, just, you know, you want to slap yourself, don't you?
Well,
like
these are things that affect your life.
Yeah,
what's going
I know.
On over there really doesn't impact most people. It's unfortunate, tragic, but
It may, though. It may. Just the way these things continue to occur. And, of course, we're talking about
the attack on the mall in Nairobi.
The shopping mall, yeah. And looks like it may be almost over, but all weekend long you're hearing about more people dead, more gunfire, explosions. This militant Muslim group.
Al-Shabaab.
Yeah. Separating people who were not, you know, separating out non-Muslims, killing the non-Muslims, letting the Muslims go. Here we go. Here we go with people who are just like, forget trying to talk to them. If you could just level that place, but then there's still innocent people involved. Some have been released. It's just an absolute terrible tragedy. A couple of Canadians killed.
But other than that, what can you say or do about it? Not much. Again, very tragic.
Well, I think our governments need
Unfortunately,
to...
some people were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, no,
Wasn't a good day to go to the mall. No, no.
It's not being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, of course it is. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
You could say that about everything.
Should they have to worry about being attacked when you go to the mall? Of course not. But then again, you're not in the most civilized part of the world.
If somebody blows up your home, what are you going to say then? Oh, you're in the wrong place at the wrong time. What? In your home?
Well, that's just a fact. You were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That's kind of a
stupid statement. It doesn't matter where the location is.
Yeah, I know. But it's one of those ridiculous things. It's almost like you...
Okay, that played on a little longer than I actually wanted it to, but I think I gave you a pretty good idea of what steamed me. Gee, can you guess? Gee, they're in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I'm not going to identify the radio station, although my Canadian listeners will figure it out rather quickly, because the female co-host was trying to say, look, you know, that's enough. And... It just set me off. It's like I'm listening to this, and it's like, how cavalier is that? I am just livid. Wrong place at the wrong time? I'm so sorry, but that just did not pass with me. It really bothered me. What's he going to say next, this particular radio host? That the Christians... in Syria and across the Muslim world, it's open season on them. Well, they're in the wrong place, and they're there at the wrong time. Oh, well, they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Give me a break. We had Kenya over the weekend, and in Pakistan, we had more. It just seemed like the entire weekend was open season for Christians, ladies and gentlemen, right across the Muslim world. Do you know that in Pakistan, 78 Christians were slaughtered on Sunday? They were slaughtered by twin suicide bombers at a church. Less than 24 hours earlier, a gang of Islamic militants from Somalia murdered at least 68 workers and shoppers, including two Canadians at a mall in Kenya. Coptic Christians in Egypt have been targeted recently by supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood. And Christians in large numbers have left their Asian enclaves in Iraq and the West Bank after churches there were blown up or Christians were threatened. What about Lebanon? There's a special renaissance there with this carnage. And that is in the Bekaa Valley, where Syrian Christians have taken refuge after being attacked by extremist groups linked to al-Qaeda, such as Jabhat al-Nusra. And al-Nusra, that is Arabic, yes, as well, al-Qaeda. There's one person here, a 36-year-old gentleman named Rami Samam. He says, if we stay in Syria, they will kill us. It's that simple. This was after he celebrated Mass with his wife, her name is Sally, and her mother, father, and sister at the St. Eliseus Maronite Church. Now, Saman, he crossed into Lebanon with his extended family after Christmas, and that was after his church in the war-ravaged Syrian city of Homs was destroyed. He went to Syria briefly last month to pray during the annual Saints' Day of his old church. It took him quite a route to get there, but he did. Saman's father-in-law, his name is Musa Femi Issa. He fled from the town of Hasaka, and that's near Syria's border with Turkey. Do you know that Christians there are being kidnapped and held for ransom? Syria's border with Turkey. Christians being kidnapped, being held for ransom. We hear about the crosses being burned and other Christian symbols routinely destroyed. Issa wants to know, Mr. Issa, he wants to know, if someone comes into your house and says he will kill you, do you dance with him or do you flee? Mr. Issa said he feared for his 12-year-old daughter, Shemiz. He feared a 12-year-old, his daughter, would be raped. He says all Christian Syrians are afraid. But some Christians, they cannot leave. They do not even have enough money for a bus ticket. And I want to thank Paul Alexander for joining me. Paul, have a great afternoon. I'll be talking with you soon. Thanks for being here. And I also want to welcome Drake, who just joined me. And I also want to welcome Mark, who is joining me on the line. He's listening in archives on the line, so thanks, Mark. Yeah. See? These people, they're trapped in a sea of Islam where they're being slaughtered. 78 on Sunday. Churches bombed. Suicide bombers. And Mr. Issa, like he explains, they cannot leave. They don't have the money. Hello, Freya. Do you want your food? Okay, there you go. Go eat. Leave Mama alone. You know, now this family, they're sitting there, and they're wondering what they're going to do. They engage in a very intense family discussion. And the gist of that discussion is that the West was naive to concentrate so much on its rage on Syria's dictator, Bashar al-Assad. Well, he's a president, he's a dictator, he's a despot, yeah. But he's President Bashar al-Assad in Syria, and that's what they're talking about. You see, they bring up a very good point. Assad is the devil we know. But at least under Assad's regime, the Christians are given a modicum of protection. Mr. Assad said, if Assad goes, it doesn't mean that it's over. It will only get worse. He sits there, and he chain smokes. And he's nervous, and he's frightened for his family and his 12-year-old daughter, Shemiz. And they ask this particular reporter, who ate the heart of a human being? It was not someone from the Syrian army, wasn't it? Who ate the heart of that Syrian soldier while yelling, God is great? Allahu Akbar. And he's referring to that freak show, that video that went viral. That would be Khalid al-Hamad. His pseudonym is Abu Sakr. Yeah, he's one of the rebels in Syria. Yeah, that's him. That's the one we saw on the video. Yep, he's the one eating the heart out of the Syrian soldier. Good old Khalid al-Hamad, a.k.a. Abu Sakr, where he says, I swear to God, we will eat your hearts, Alawite soldiers, Abashar, the dog. And alloate, that's actually what the president of Syria is, Al-Assad. He's an alloate, and that is a branch of Shia. So you got yourself the minority Shia, you got yourself the majority Sunni. And this is something that Saman wants to know, is why doesn't the West help the Syrian Christians? Is it because we support Assad? He goes on to say, I can tell you that before the trouble, we were very safe, even at night. We had free schools and medicine. In return, all we had to do was not become involved in politics, so we didn't. Do you believe that? Under the devil we know, Assad, the Christians enjoyed a modicum of protectionism. Now that is becoming destabilized, and we are seeing the ramifications when we look into Syria and we look into Pakistan. Pakistani Christians being slaughtered. Just like that. Saman, he's a Roman Catholic. He receives free food and lodging. He works as a caretaker at an apartment building. His father-in-law, he belongs to a Syrian Orthodox sect. He's paid $400 a month as a tailor in a small local business. But you know, his wages don't cover hardly anything, because he pays $300 of that $400 a month in rent. He shares that with his wife and their two children. He said, I sold my house, which is in a Muslim area, for $4,000 U.S. before he crossed the border. The savings are gone now, though. Those savings are gone now. He begins to weep. I can't help who I am. I was born a Christian. I will die a Christian. This man is weeping. His wife, Elan Hannah, she breaks into tears too. Saman, he finally ended the interview with a grim joke. He said, former U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice promised us a new Middle East a few years ago, and she turned out to be right. This is the new Middle East. We all kill each other. And I want to welcome Vito Esposito into the chat room. Hi, Vito. See, this is what has been wrought upon the Christians as well. What happened in Kenya? What happened in Pakistan? Happening in Syria? I am telling you, I do not know what these people did to bring this on, but Islam is not going anywhere anytime soon. This has been going on for 1,400 years, and it's going to go on for another 1,400 years, unless we stop it right now. I want to take a call, though, because there's a man who I am so grateful who called in, and that's Tim. And I'm going to put Tim on the air with me right now and welcome Tim. And that would be Cat Strangler 101. And what are you playing in the background there? Hi, Tim. Oh, he's there somewhere. I hear music. I don't know what he's doing. Oh, can you guys hear that? I don't know. I can hear it through my headset. I don't know if you guys can hear that in the studio, but I think Tim put up a stand and walked away. Oh, Neil says, hey, it's a good girl.
okay. I don't know what he's doing. I'm like, hey, Tim, I'm going to put you back on hold for a minute.
You know what? In a way, that was the comic relief I needed because some of you walked in a little late into the show, and I was screaming to the point of pulling out my hair. I was just fit to be tied at the beginning of the program. My rant probably lasted a good 20 minutes, but it was needed because you need to hear this. You have to understand what Islam is and what Islam is not. And I will reiterate again, it is not a religion of peace. We have witnessed that. We have seen the underbelly of Islam over and over and over again. What's it going to take? How much more of Islam are you willing to tolerate? The myths of Islam. Islam means peace. No. And I've told you that. No. Islam means submission. Islam respects women's rights. They respect women as equal. No, we do not believe that for one second because we are all too familiar with Sharia law. One of my favorites is the jihad. Yeah. Yeah, you know the jihad. Yeah, that one always amuses me when they try to tell you that jihad is a personal struggle. It's an inner struggle. We are cleansing ourselves. We are purifying ourselves. We are making ourselves better human beings. Jihad, the inner struggle. Yeah, well, that might be the greater jihad. But you know what? They're not practicing the greater jihad. No, they're practicing the lesser jihad. And that's the violent kinetic end of the jihad. Allahu Akbar. Mm-hmm. I've already explained to you where the term religion of peace came from. Yep. Read the rest of that. It will be a religion of peace when world caliphate is accomplished. Islam is tolerant of other religions. Well, look at that. Didn't you just listen to me talk about what happened in Kenya, in Pakistan, what's going on in Syria? How those bastards, when they stormed that shopping mall, Westgate Shopping Center, separated the Christians from the Muslims. Let the Muslims go. Shot the Christians. So Islam tolerant of other religions? I don't think so. This one too. Islam facilitated a golden age of scientific discovery. You know what? You show me somebody out of the Islamic cult who procured a Nobel Peace Prize, and I will dance like a little monkey, or maybe an ape. Actually, maybe an ape and pig, okay? Because I'm an ape, I'm a pig. I can do both. I think they have won 2 Nobel Peace Prizes, and both were due to collaboration work. Oh, another myth. Islam is opposed to slavery. Are you kidding? Who do you think were turning over the slaves to the British colonies back then in Africa? Who do you think were handing over those black Africans to the British colonies to take back to the American colonies in the West in general? You got her. Who has slaves today? Come on. I know you guys can get this one. Saudi Arabia. Yes. And they still believe in turning them into eunuchs, some of them. Yeah. Yep. Eunuchs and slaves alive and well in Saudi Arabia and environs. Islam is incompatible with terrorism. Okay. I'm not even going to touch that one. Oh, Islam is a democracy. Yeah, because we see democracy flourishing all over the place. You know, the Arab Spring was wonderful. Democracy flourished. It was just fantastic. Ain't it grand? Look at that democracy flourishing over there. Good grief. And the most assaultive one on my little list here that I scribbled down, the Quran is the Muslim counterpart to the Bible. I want to tell you guys something. You read that Quran, and you read the Bible as we follow it today, and that's the New Testament. And if you can find anything compatible between those two, I will dance like an ape and a pig, and I'll even put on lipstick. Okay? I'm running down to my last 20 minutes. I cannot believe where the time goes, but I'm going to see if I can get Tim back here. I think perhaps Tim might have had trouble with the audio, so he's listening through his phone and accidentally pressed the one button. I suspect that's what happened. Oh. And I love what Vito Esposito is saying in the chat room. Yes, Cal, they took the cell phone and turned it into a detonator. Yeah, that classifies as technology and science, and kudos to Vito Esposito. It's been not an easy show for me to do today, as you can tell. It's been hell on wheels. I have been wrapping my head how I wanted to go about doing this. I'm very, very distressed, very upset, hearing all these reports come out of the Middle East and Africa this weekend. Really wears a person down. But these are the truths that we have to acknowledge. These are the truths of Islam. Islam and its handiwork. All those dead bodies. Islam making a true difference in the world, one body at a time. Here I sit in the comfort of my home in North America. And what that idiot radio host said, what I shared with you, that clip I shared with you, which I thought was a little too long, I kind of went on the other end. My apologies for the length. However, you did catch the gist. Well, they're on the other side of the planet. No, they're not. See, that's the thing. People, you have to understand, they are not on the other side of the planet. They're right here in our backyard. They're here. Hello, is this thing on? Hello? They're right here. Who's to say that could not happen right here? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, it did. 9/11. Oh, stupid me for forgetting. We are all Kenyans today. We are all Christian Pakistanis today. We are all Christians in the Middle East today. That is what we are today. I've had enough of this. I'm going to close out this show because I have a few show announcements I want to share with you, but I'm going to ask you one last time. How much more of Islam are you willing to tolerate? you think about that. I want to share something with you, though. Don't know if I have it in here. Well, I want to play, I just want to play this 2-minute song, and I just want you to pray for what's going on out there in the world, okay? Because I'm very, very sad. This is a sad show for me to do today, but I want you to really, really think about the victims in Kenya and the victims in Pakistan, the slaughter that they endured. I'll be back in a quick second. Program. I want to thank everybody who joined me today, and I want to thank everybody who joins me every single show that I do, whether you're in my chat room or you're listening on other devices or you listen in archives. But I really want to thank Tim, and that's Cat Strangler 101 who joined me. I want to thank Colin Dodds, and I'm glad, Colin, that you could finally make a chat room live like you were saying. Drake's Drum, one of my mainstays. I want to thank the guests that joined me as well. I want to thank Luchadora, who has her own radio show here on Block Talk Radio, two of them, in fact. I want to thank Paul Alexander and his permission and his blog that I borrowed. I put the link to Paul's blog right there in my show highlights, so please check it out. I want to thank Poppy all the way across the pond, who has always... Poppy's been with me from day one. I've been doing this show for about a year and a half now. Poppy has been with me from day one, and Poppy is my encouragement. Vito Esposito, Mamma Mia, No Sharia, who also has a radio show right here on Block Talk Radio. I want to thank people who are listening on the line. I want to thank Mark. I think that's you, Mark, 937. If I'm wrong, 937, bless you and thank you. B Before I do go, though, I do have a few programming highlights, and because I do have a couple of other radio hosts in my chat room, I do want to share with you that there is a lot of news about Islam out there. Do not stop listening. Do not stop educating yourself. I want you to go to the Radio Jihad Network and listen to the programs there, because there are so many there that you can listen to. It is unreal. For example, we have Vito Esposito tonight. As a matter of fact, he's going to be on at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, okay? That is the Radio Jihad Network right here on Block Talk Radio. We also have on Tuesdays, we have the Andrew Bezad Show, and that is 11 p.m. Eastern Time. So please listen to Andrew Bezad, 11 p.m. Eastern Time on the Radio Jihad Network. On Wednesday, we have Jane and Lucha, and that is Luchadora in my chat room. That is Freedom Quest, and that is on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. So be there for that. On Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, we have the Gadi Edelman Show, and that is American Akbar. On Friday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Dr. Mark Christian and Corey Miller. On Saturday at 10 p.m., Revealing the Truth About Islam with Usama Dakdok. And on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we have the David Joyce Show, and that is the Uncle Dave Show. Believe me, I want you folks to listen to all of these radio programs, and I want you to visit all the blogs out there. Like I say, I want you to visit Bare Naked Islam. I want you to visit Hold Your Awakens. I want you to visit Jihad Watch. For goodness sake, there are so many out there. Visit all of these. Defender of the Faith. Visit these. You will be so glad that you did. And I have a barking dog somewhere up there, you can probably hear. But I truly do want to thank you all for being here once again. And my dog threw me off my script. Hey, Brandy, please. I don't know what's going on up there. I'm just ignoring it. Guys, I will see you back here on Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. As you know, I do the two shows a week. I do the Monday afternoon show at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and I do the Friday show at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And by the way, Bonnie, a Bare Naked Islam, had such a great time. She's going to be back in the future. So if you didn't catch Bonnie on the Red Fox Blogger Show on Friday, please check it out in the archive. Fantastic show, and Bonnie had a great time, and she will be back. Guys, I'm not going to say goodnight because I expect to see all of you in an hour and a half at the Vito Esposito Show right here, Radio Jihad Network, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're not there, I'm going to be very, very, very angry at you. My ranting and my raving. You guys put up with a lot from me. Guys, seriously, I'll talk to you soon. I'll see you on Friday. Bye-bye.